don't know that because there's so many people that wouldn't have anything but wall-to-wall carpeting.
Well, but I think it's coming.
This rug is so worn out. It was an original antique Chinese rug. It's so worn out. If it were a broad loom carpet, people would think I was poverty stricken if I left it here. But as long as it's an Oriental, it can go to into holes.
Crazy, but it's true.
But I think people are coming
which
back.
Has nothing to do with my life.
Well, it has to do with you and the kind of person you are. So it does have to do with your life. You were talking about your children, and you were saying.
Yeah, but when we finished about my parents. My parents were intelligent people and had intellectual pursuits. Mm-hmm.
And you, in turn, passed on the same type of thing to your family.
My father was a great influence on my reading. Mm-hmm. And my mother was a wonderful woman with good common sense and knowledge. Mm-hmm.
Did your children know their grandparents? Did your children know your grandparents?
Your parents.
They knew my mother. They were devoted to my mother. But my father died when the oldest boy was about 10.
So he really...
I'm very sorry he did, but I think it did a very good influence.
Mm-hmm. But they live next door to you live next door to your mother.
So that
your mother really had some influence.
No, my mother never moved into that house. We exchanged houses.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And my mother moved down to Shanley.
Oh, I see.
House. We finally tore down Mother's house and had a tennis court. I lived there until my husband died 15 years ago. And 3 years after I lived in that big house with partitions built in every room and so forth, my son, who was an architect, built me this house. Mm-hmm. I had him build a house for one of the
Did your children all go to school in Pittsburgh?
All the children, well, the three oldest, all went to public school. My husband did not believe in private schools. And the two youngest went to Winchester Christian, and the boy went to Arnold. And then they all went on to college.
Would you like to tell us what they're doing now?
I never like to talk about what my children are doing.
Well, but the fact that...
The oldest son is an architect, and he took his postgraduate degree under Mies van der Rohe. So he, therefore, was greatly influenced by the modern school. Mm-hmm. And he is now head curator of modern art at the Chicago Art Institute.
I see.
Before the war, he built homes and so forth. And after the war, when he came back, Mies van der Rohe asked him to teach at this school. And he became a professor, and then they asked him to be curator.
And you have a daughter who has a gallery in Paris?
I have a daughter who is with the State Department in the Cultural Department, who put on many outstanding exhibits of American artists. Mm-hmm. Many of them are artists that have now had great reputation. And she recognized their ability, and it was shown at this center, cultural center in Paris.
And
since then, she resigned from that after being with them about, I think she was with them about 18 years maybe, I don't know, for years she resigned. And she opened her own gallery in Paris.
I see. And are your other children in the arts?
Yeah, my other daughter is a New York well-known artist. And she went to art school, Tyler, in Philadelphia, and her husband, she met him there, and he's an artist. And they are dedicated artists. and I never tried to influence any child to be honest.
Evidently, it was something hereditary.
I don't know what it is. They were allowed to read any book, no matter how fine the art book or anything in that library. In the library at home, which we had, was one with, you know, like those center hall houses that had a room on each side.
Mm-hmm.
This room is a music room, originally McCauley's. In those days, everybody had to have a piano.
Mm-hmm.
It's like everybody now thinks they have to have a painting by somebody.
That's right.
And when we moved in, I had my father's library, I had my husband's, and I had books. So we built up to the ceiling books all around in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And the children always had access to any book they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
No book, no matter how fine it was, or you know how, right. I mean fine as far as...
You mean
as
valuable as far as...
A good paper.
Yes.
Always had access to any books they wanted.
And I presume there were many art books there. Because of your interest in art.
Because I had a lot of art.
That's right. So that... somehow their interest in art.
You asked about who people are influenced. The two people that influenced my life, I'm not talking about my husband,
mm-hmm.
and my children have been a terrific influence.
Yes.
Because they have such varied interests, and their varied interests interest me. So whenever I see anything that pertains to what they're interested in, I cut it out and send it to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I have the same kind of relationship. I have the most beautiful relationship with my grandchildren.
That's very nice.
And I send them clippings. I have a clipping circle.
That's interesting.
Ms. Barr, at what point did you start to become really a sculptor? After your children were grown?
Well, I did some art that was a little at the Norton Gallery. That's where I took the painting, you know.
Yes.
And then they had Jose the Prep come down. And you asked me who were the people that had the greatest influence on my life.
Yes.
I'm counting out my husband and my children
and
grandchildren. What's his sculptor?
Mm-hmm. Jose de Crep.
Yeah. I consider that a great turning point in my life, because I think if you do something when you're older, I was 60 when I started to do sculpture, so I was 59, I don't know which.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt it right away, sort of in my bones.
Mm-hmm.
And that man had another type of personality, but just a great personality. Wonderful.
Mm-hmm. And he was your...
Those are the two outsiders that had an influence on my life. I think it's very good if you sometimes come in contact with somebody that has a very good influence on your life.
Oh, surely.
You know, you ask me the kind of things that Dr. Levy told us. These have nothing to do with my life here. But just to tell you the type of things he told us. He would tell us when Moses was at the burning bush.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the burning bush, he interpreted as the oil spurting from the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if ever there was a prediction of oil, it's now.
Right.
Too. I remember the story he told us about the Red Sea. There was a terrific storm, and the wave of the Red Sea was low, and the waves parted. And the Israelites got through, and the waves
came back together.
You know, and those were the kind of things that when, I don't know, if you have a logical mind, they mean so much more than all this.
That's right.
Telling, praying, and so forth. But that was introduced too. He taught the most beautiful, immortality. Always about immortality.
Mm-hmm.
He would take the butterfly and how it turned into the caterpillar, you know,
mm-hmm.
and went on in its sequence of life. and he was just, he had such a beautiful interpretation of the kind of thing that a child like me could comprehend.
Mm-hmm.
But he talked about immortality all the time. And to me, that is, death means immortality if the person is able to influence.
Mm-hmm. Very
true. He asked me a few things. These just come to mind.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not getting new quotations from Dr. Lee.
but it's interesting to hear the type of things that impressed you so, you know, that, and the kind of a man.
I even tell my grandchildren about some of Dr. Lee's interpretations.
It's interesting for all those years.
And
so
the family have almost, we all consider ourselves Jewish, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But we do not, outside of Jean, nobody takes any great interest in the temple. But Jean is really the most devoted member of the congregation.
Mm-hmm.
Do a number of your children still live in Pittsburgh?
Do they what?
How many of your children still live in Pittsburgh?
One.
Just
Alexander Jr.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then you have.
And I have mentioned him. He's a businessman.
Yes, he's the one that runs all of your affairs.
He is really a real student. He has real brains.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's always good to have a businessman in the family.
You know him
at all? My husband knows him. I don't.
But he isn't just a businessman. He knows what he's talking about.
A good businessman has to know what he's talking about, doesn't he?
He doesn't talk about something that he doesn't know about,
mm-hmm.
but he knows about a great deal.
Yes.
Ms. Spar, where have you shown your artwork, your sculpture? You've had a number of artworks.
Oh, I've sold quite a few. I never have tried for a show. I've been asked by a few dealers if I would give a show. I have never particularly wanted to have a show. But I did have a one-man show. Gordon Washburn asked me if I would have a one-man show. And that was about 10 years ago. And I never was so surprised in my life, and I didn't want to do it. But my children persuaded me that it was ridiculous not to do it.
Right.
I did not think I was a caliber to have a show, but I did have a one-man show at
The Carnegie Museum here in Pittsburgh.
Carnegie Museum.
Very.
And they own one of my pieces. And one is owned by the Norton Gallery in Palm Beach.
Mm-hmm.
And another is owned by it's an art sort of a library. Not just an art library, it's a library.
Tell us a little bit about your sculpture. I remember you told us you work in dimension and that you like form. Perhaps you could elaborate on the type of sculpture that you do.
Well, I was very interested. Well, in the first place, I was taking a course at the Norton Gallery, which was this man, Jose de Prepicini, which was fascinated me, how the ancients made pottery.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always been interested in antiquity and excavations and the ancient countries. And archaeology, I'm fanatical about.
Mm-hmm.
I take the magazines and I read them. And I'm very keen about all ancient civilizations. Not to say that I'm not also keen about modern, but I'm very much involved in ancient civilization. So I wanted to know how the Chinese and all made their pottery.
Mm-hmm.
And I took this 6 weeks course with him, and when I was finished, he was a sculptor.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a period when sculpture was very low. Nobody wanted to have sculpture around. Now it's become almost a craze to have a piece of sculpture.
Right.
and he needed the money, and he came down there for 3 months tough. And when I was doing the course on pottery, which was fascinating, we didn't have a kiln. We had a hole in the ground in which we put cow dung and old dead leaves and a fire, and fire down in a hole. Mm-hmm. The whole thing was very interesting, and the man was so interesting. And I said to him, "Oh, I just wish I could give him something I could take with you." And he said, "Well, come on in, and I'll give you a stone. Come into my class." And I went into his class, and that's how I started. I said, "Well, I don't know about anatomy." Mm-hmm. I never took courses in drawing, these desultory courses I took in painting. I picked up a great deal of it myself, and I had never taken anatomy courses. That was the way they taught art in those days.
Yes.
So anyhow, that's how I started. From then on, I spend about every morning, now that I can't spend longer, I spend most of my mornings out in my studio. My studio's back there.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know this. I was very much interested to begin with in heads, like a Greek head with that Greek smile, and the Assyrian with his beard. And I did quite a few heads, and the Maya heads with their funny ears businesses. And I did those. And then I got into rhythm. And I got obsessed with rhythm, and I still am.
And that's your primary interest.
Everything has rhythm, from the shell to the fern when it unfolds. Everything in life has rhythm. In nature.
Mm-hmm. And that's
in nature. We destroyed rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you find your... You work mostly in marble now, don't you?
I worked in marble until... recent years. Now I work in a marble alabaster. It's veined like marble, and not. I don't work on as hard a stone as I do. The snail is pure marble. I have quite a few things I did in marble.
Do you sell your pieces?
I've quite a few people who've seen them when I've exhibited them and bought them.
But you're not doing anything for sale as such.
No.
You do everything.
Not like Aaron Oil.
Yeah.
And you told us, too, that you were very interested in the sense of touch, in the feel, the texture of your sculpture. And didn't you tell us that last time?
What do you mean about the touch?
Well, I remember you told us that you sold a piece to Cy Adelsheim.
Well, that's what I call it, my mom.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Usually. And I told you about this man because I always liked that story.
Yes, but that was very interesting, too.
Well, you can feel one of my pieces downstairs.
Yes, we did when we were here last time.
They're beautiful.
Beautiful. They're beautiful
really
to feel.
They're pleasing to the touch and pleasing to the eye.
Well, but he could feel it because they have his... Some stones take a better finish than others.
Mm. You choose each piece yourself, each piece of stone.
Nobody's ever touched anything I've done except the big snail in the garden. Didn't I tell you about it?
No.
Well, I did a snail about this big, and my daughter has it in Paris. And I had to show her, oh, I forgot this. She had it in Paris, and she exhibited it. I mean, she admitted it for exhibit, and they accepted it. There was a sculpture show in the garden of the Rodin Museum, and it was shown there.
Oh.
And some sculptors saw her, you know, some friends of hers, and they said, "Why doesn't your mother have that enlarged?" And there was a place down in Carrara where Michelangelo, you know, got all his
marble. Wow.
They had a big corner set. Oh, a huge place, huge studio. And they did enlarging for sculptors. You know, if you do something that big,
mm-hmm.
you have helpers to take away the extra
mm-hmm.
that's a waste of time, all this extra thing out of a big block.
Right.
And they do that work down there, and they also copy. It isn't a copy, it's a replica. They measure. They have a huge caliber. You know what caliber? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
They have tremendous calibers. And they will measure inch by inch the size of the 3 foot and enlarge it to the size you ask.
Mm.
And then you, superintendent, I went back to Carrara 3 times while they were doing this, and I picked the marble from the quarry that I wanted, and they quarried the big block.
Mm. I didn't know
and
that
that's the good. Only... It almost didn't get in the garden. I never thought of that when I ordered it, you know.
Ah, for goodness.
It went in by 1 inch, that's a...
Oh, my.
That's a very interesting.
I've talked an awful lot.
Are you tired?
Okay. Because that's right.
Can I ask another question? Are any of your grandchildren interested in art?
Yes. One of Alexander Jr.'s sons is very artistic. And then my daughter's son is an architect. And her daughter is playing, I don't know if she's going to be an artist or not. I'm not sure.
You wonder sometimes if the tendency to artistic ability is hereditary, or if it's simply environment, growing up in a family who appreciate art. How do you feel about that?
I don't know what it is.
I often wonder, because it seems that children of musical families are... grow up with a certain talent towards...
I question if you have music in your family. My family had no musical feeling. When I say feeling, you know what you
yes.
even talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And we all tried to have them take lessons in something.
So then it's not really...
So it could be environment, because mine have seen this around them,
yes.
you know, more. But now my oldest son... He was always artistically inclined, from even a little boy, and Alexander was always interested in mechanical things and in everything related. You know, he's wonderful with his hands. Our children are absolutely marvelous with their hands. I mean,
it's a great gift, isn't
well.
It? It's a great gift to be able to use your hands well. So many
well,
people
I don't
really
mean
can.
All of them do anything great.
No, but just to be able to use them well, to be able to do anything.
Alexander can build almost anything. Well, the oldest grandson, he's with his father in the business, learning the business. But he makes jewelry. I don't know if you've seen any of Alexander's jewelry.
Mm-hmm.
He makes jewelry.
There's
an architect and a jeweler, and a very sensitive, I'm sure he's an artist. That's one of them still.
Mm.
Do the children, do they come to visit you right
he's
now?
He's a landscape architect, by the way. That's his graduate part.
I see. That's more rhythm.
Hmm?
That also is rhythm.
Yes.
Do they come to visit you frequently?
Oh, all the time. There's only one lives here. But the grandchildren all down in Florida, I have one after another.
You still go to Florida every winter?
Mm-hmm.
For the whole winter. Someone just said you're getting ready to go to Europe now?
Well, I'm thinking of going. I'm going to see the doctor Friday.
I
always go to Europe in the summer to visit my daughter.
Yeah.
And I don't like to miss it, but I don't know. I'm going to Europe, but I don't know just when.
You were very interested, you said, in archaeological things. Have you ever gone on digs?
No, that digs are a recent thing.
Really?
Oh, yes, digs are... Archaeology's become a almost... What's the word I want? The thing to do now. Don't you think?
Yes, I do think so, but
I... Archaeology is... I would like to think one of my sons be an archaeologist. I liked archaeology long before this craze for it.
before it became the fashionable thing to do. But you say it's recent, but really it's not. I mean, archaeological digs that people go on to because it's the thing to do are perhaps recent, but they've been having digs for many years, haven't they?
Archaeology was done by archaeologists, students of languages, students of history, by people that had made a great study of it.
I see.
It has now become, which I think is a very fine thing, the young people are going on these digs.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a new style.
Oh, I didn't realize that that was new.
It is a craze at the present on these digs. And I think it's really good.
Mm-hmm.
But archaeology really started when, people found things for years. But I would think that when they discovered Herculaneum and Pompeii, I think that's when it started to become a more universal thing. I'm making a statement without any background to it, but that influenced so much in Europe and in decoration and everything when they discovered Pompeii and Herculaneum.
Do you find that your grandchildren, rather, have a different set of values than your children had that you had?
They certainly have.
Do you mean that kindly or unkindly?
They certainly have different ideas, and I'd accept them.
Well, good for you, because I really think it's very difficult if you don't accept them. You have to realize that life is quite different today, and it, I admire people who are able to.
What are you going to do about it? I believe in trying to understand friends rather than to
criticize them
and to antagonize.
Well,
I think you have to understand what's going on.
That's right.
That's not easy to do. It's very difficult to understand what's going on. Would you...
I don't know what these divorces that are taking place after people are married 2 and 3 years. I don't know which is better, whether they should try it out and then separate if they don't want to live together. I don't know what's
the best. Well, that's the thing. I mean, it remains to be seen, you know, whether the way... the morality today is better in the long run or not. I mean, I think you almost have to go along with it because there's not much you can do.
Simple.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Their households are simple and they don't have servants.
No.
I don't mean several servants. They don't have anybody.
No, that's right. And they don't want the things that require servants. But it's a whole different way of life.
After you were married in my time, even although you certainly didn't have anything like the financial material things your parents had, why, sometimes two people would wait 2, 3, 4 years till they had enough money, and then they'd start out more or less like their parents in a much more,
smaller way.
Fashion. But now, they don't seem to want any of these things.
They don't.
But I don't think these digs are wonderful. What I mean is, archaeology has become quite the thing to do among young people.
Mm.
And I think it's fine. Very educational. But what I meant is, archaeology was really more for the very highly educated.
The students who understood.
Well, people that were students and then became, you know, more masters.
Mm-hmm. Well, it wasn't a fun thing then. It was to gain.
No, it was a serious study, and everything was cataloged and investigated, you know. And so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it isn't so long since we got those fossils. Those big fossils down at Carnegie, the dinosaurs.
No, that's right.
That is fairly recent, and that was in Utah, and that was when they were the first ever found in a hole like that they may have found bones and all. And I don't know if you know it, but some of the museums have, maybe we would have a consul or an ambassador in some country.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a very good one, to give us an example, was Crete. For instance, the Metropolitan had a consul was there, had a big shipment of things sent to Crete, which he appreciated, you know, for their antiquity. And they had them in the basement for years. When I say years, I mean they've only brought them up in about the last 10 years. And so that's what I mean by